This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening and welcome to The Informer. Dean Beck with you for the last time for 2016. On tonight's show, we have a very exciting exclusive for you. Our UK correspondent, Dan Vo, speaks to the nephew of Harvey Milk, Stuart Milk. That's coming up, and we'll also find out what Yvonne Gardner is doing for Christmas Day. All that and more tonight on The Informer. Harvey Milk was one of the first openly gay politicians voted into public office in the United States, and his assassination in 1978 was the subject of an award-winning Hollywood film. Stuart Milk is his nephew and carries on his legacy. And like his uncle, Stuart is internationally prominent as a campaigner for LGBTI rights and equality. Stuart was the guest of honour in the UK at the launch of LGBT History Month at the House of Commons, where he was joined by MPs on both sides of British Parliament. Stuart met with The Informer's UK correspondent Dan Vo to discuss the 2017 programme, which will coincide with the 50th anniversary of the partial decriminalisation of homosexuality in England.
Stuart, you are in London to open the LGBT History Month. It is in February when it starts proper, so the month is in February of next year, and it does seem a little way away, but you know, if people are going to be involved, if you know, Australians are going to travel to the UK or expats, Aussie expats who are in this country right now, if they want to get involved, they do have to start thinking about it right now, don't they?
Yes, I mean, this is a perfect time to focus in on our history. LGBT History Month is taking place in 15 hubs around the UK. Schools Out and the great committee that runs UK LGBT History Month has done a phenomenal job. I've been honored and lucky enough to participate for the past 2 years in different hubs throughout the country. They're all fantastic. They're all very individual. It's the time for people to tell their own stories. What I think is the most exciting thing about these hubs sometimes is the networking that Professor Saunders has created, where people do get to interact, tell their own stories, hear about our history, relate to what's happening in their own life. And we have living history, so we've got people who've been part of the embrace of marriage equality here in the UK. And we've got people who were some of the first in their communities to get married, to have a same-sex marriage. That's living history, and it's important that people, you know, celebrate that and talk about it and then learn about our heroes that we stand on their shoulders from the past.
So, Stuart, in 2017, it will be the 50th anniversary of the partial decriminalisation of homosexuality in England and Wales. How much have we gained in those years? How much progress have we seen?
Well, we've come a tremendous way. We have, from decriminalization to tolerance to non-discrimination to marriage equality, which is celebration. But you know, the reality is that civil rights and equal rights and justice is not linear. So it's very important that we recognize that, especially in a time like today when we see rise of ultra-nationalists that have on their shopping list minority communities and in many cases LGBT communities included in that shopping list. You know, I've been to places where it's criminal to be LGBT. I've had everything thrown at me in the world in gay marches, from eggs in the Baltics to urine in the Middle East. But the scariest actually was in Hungary. And why it was the scariest, and there's some correlation to this ultra-nationalist movement that we now see in the West. But in Hungary, with the Jobbiks and the Fetsz party there, Viktor Orbán, the scariest part was the silence. So there's a gay march on the main avenue and Drowsky Boulevard. I went there for the first time after they had tremendous violence, and they had successful marches for about 10 years. And then they got this new ultra-nationalist government coalition in. It's so eerie to be in a LGBT rights march, and there's silence. People close their windows. People shutter their storefronts when the march goes by. The silence, you know, again, it's there's a famous Albert Einstein quote, which is, you know, it's not those that do evil, it's those who sit by and do nothing, those who sit in silence. And what was really scary is to see the silence. And so we've, you know, one of the great messages of LGBT history that we can teach people is what's happened when we've been silent and what has not happened when we've spoken up.
Your uncle Harvey, he's, in terms of civil rights in the US and across the entire world, he has inspired generations of people. But if you look at when he started campaigning in the 70s?
Yeah, he first ran for public office in 1972. It was illegal to be LGBT. It's legal to be LGBT even in California, and it was considered a mental illness by the American Psychiatric and Psychological Association. They were still doing electric shock therapy for gay people then. And not only was he running for public office, but he was asking people to join him in being visible and out. And that was really unheard of. You know, he got death threats every day. And it wasn't Sean Penn's creation in the movie Milk. It wasn't a Hollywood fictional story. He did record tape recording that said, "Let the bullets that smash through my brain smash through every closet door." He knew he was going to be assassinated. It was our history of firsts in civil rights movements. And the death threats were just constant. He didn't know who and he didn't know when. He only served 11 months. He absolutely knew he was going to be killed. You know, and he really did want those bullets to end the closet door, to end the mask that have to put on, and not just for the LGBT community. He really did believe that people, that our differences was a gift. It was not a weakness. That our differences was a gift to the world, and that we needed to celebrate each other. And he was not big on tolerance. He didn't want to simply end discrimination. He wanted people to be celebrated in their families, in their communities, in their workplaces. And so it was his dream that those bullets would end people having to hide who they were.
Stuart, you've said before that it is the conversations that we have around the dinner table with our families that matter the most. Your Uncle Harvey, Stuart, was his openness embraced by the family when he came out?
Well, it was by my parents. My mom and father actually campaigned for him in 1972 and 1974. My mother hates when I show the photo of her campaigning with him because of her early 70s hairdo. His father, my grandfather, supported him, but it was one of those things where they kind of didn't talk about it, gave money to his campaign. And certainly, you know, I remember going into my grandfather's apartment in 1973, and on his table was the New York Times that said, "Avowed homosexual runs again. Many people are disgusted." That was the Times, and that's what people were called then, avowed homosexual, runs for public office again. And it was right there. And I remember my mother and father didn't talk about it. And I was only 14, so I didn't say anything. But he certainly was aware of it. I don't know what the private conversations with my uncle and my grandfather were. But I can tell you that I had tons of conversations with Harvey. I was 17 when he was killed. He was, you know, he told everyone in San Francisco, "I have a gay nephew." But he never actually brought that up to me. He just said it was important that I be authentic and that I don't hide who I am. You know, because I told them I felt different and I struggled in school because, you know, I didn't feel the same as everyone else. And he would just say, you know, that's think about how people who are different from the mainstream are bringing a new perspective, a perspective that's not common, and how important that is for the world. He gave me a book called Seven Arrows, which is a Native American tradition, when I was 12. And he wrote in it a Native American saying, which is, "You and all your differences is the medicine that the world needs, even when the world doesn't accept that."
President-elect Trump has said he doesn't have a problem with gay marriage. Will he be a friend of LGBT people, the community?
We can look at the record of his vice president. I've debated Mike Pence when he was governor of Indiana on national TV, when he doubled down, when he refused to go off his law that he passed, which was a refuse to serve LGBT law. It was something that would allow all public accommodations. If you owned a restaurant, a hotel, any business, you could have said for your religious freedom that you could put up a sign, no gay served, or no LGBT served. And, you know, and he believes in conversion therapy. So we're concerned. We have some appointees. We have a appointee to our education department who believes in conversion therapy. So this is very antithetical to our last 8 years under President Obama. And so we are concerned. Now, Trump, President-elect Trump, actually said not that he supports gay marriage. He said that it's settled. The problem with that is that it's really not settled. The Supreme Court, by one vote, gave us gay marriage throughout the United States. If you look at his 20 picks for justices of the Supreme Court, and his litmus test is abortion rights. It's called Roe versus Wade, which legalized abortion throughout the United States. There's none of those picks that are ardent supporters of what's called right to life, which is really anti-choice. None of those are supporters of LGBT marriage. So he may say that he's got that it's settled, but that's not his decision. It will be his appointee's decision. And they, once they're appointed, do not owe anything to the president. They're not answerable to him.
You've accepted the Presidential Medal of Freedom for Harvey Milk. This was awarded by President Obama.
His name was Harvey Milk, and he was here to recruit us, all of us, to join a movement and change a nation. For much of his early life, he had silenced himself. In the prime of his life, he was silenced by the act of another. But in the brief time in which he spoke, and ran and led, his voice stirred the aspirations of millions of people. He would become, after several attempts, one of the first openly gay Americans elected to public office. And his message of hope, hope unashamed, hope unafraid, could not ever be silenced. It was Harvey who said it best. You gotta give him hope.
And you've spoken for him on campaigns during his campaigning as well on LGBT issues. What was it like working with President Obama?
Oh, he's incredible. Some of us in the gay community say he was the gay president. But I mean, but you know, the president and the first lady said to me in 2009, first year in office, at the White House, they said, "We're going to get this done." And it's and the fact of the matter is, civil rights equality never happens fast enough. But everything that we had hoped for was accomplished during these 8 years, except some of it was accomplished by executive action and in terms of legal rights. And those executive actions can be reversed. So, you know, we have come off probably the greatest amount of light that we've seen from the White House. So the president has done so much to move not just laws, but society ahead. And then, you know, everyday people have picked up the gauntlet, really, and moved that ahead. Progress requires vigilance.
Australia is an interesting example where we are one of the last English-speaking Western countries in the world to not equalise gay marriage. I mean, do you think that there's hope for Australia? Finally, you know, it's Australia and Northern Ireland. They're the last ones. Do you think Australians could?
I think the political climate is not as conducive to that right now. And then you're going to see some possible movement backwards in the rest of the West, which could spur Australians to give some halt to that. I do think that civil society in Australia and the broader social society, all segments of it have moved forward. And I think that that's more important sometimes than the legal piece of paper and equality. Marriage equality will come to Australia. It will be there. I can guarantee you that it will be there. I don't think we're going to see it. And I would love to be surprised, but I don't think we're going to see it in the next year. I think we're going to have some struggle in terms of getting it through the hurdles that are in place right now in terms of legislatively passing it. Australians will get marriage equality. Progress and social justice definitely moves forward. It just doesn't happen necessarily in the order that we all hope, and it never happens fast enough.
You go out to a lot of schools as part of LGBT History Month. You go into the schools. What's that like?
Schools are amazing because, you know, we have somewhat of an equality generation in many countries. Equality generation of young people are a generation of young people that don't know a time when LGBT people were criminalized, when there was tremendous stigmatization of LGBT people. And what's really interesting is sometimes administrators, for instance, I'll give you one of your neighbors, Ireland, as an example. Before, when I went to Ireland 3 years ago to help them plan their marriage equality movement and to bring all the Irish civil society organizations together, we did that with the U.S. ambassador. We asked to go to schools, and there was hesitation about the primary schools, the young kids, and they were very open about the older. And it was really interesting that the LGBT organizations had never gone to the schools there. And they said, well, you know, you're going to get a fairly good response from the older kids, but the younger ones were a little bit worried. Well, the younger ones were actually fine. In fact, they were asking me questions of, do I know Kem from Modern Family? And do I know, I mean, they saw it as a celebration of the diversity of life. They actually saw it as familiar to them. And they thought that these very strange characters that they've seen on popular shows, or that they may even know in their own life, as kind of an enrichment to their life, as opposed to a negative. The older kids struggled more with it because they had seen the stigmatization. They had heard, you know, even in their own schools, bullying that was centered on LGBT people. So I, you know, so going into schools is very, very refreshing. The thing for me personally is that it really teaches us how we have to keep up teaching history. Because, you know, to me, the movie Milk, which was about my uncle with Sean Penn and James Franco, is recent. But to a, you know, to a 10-year-old, they were two. They didn't watch it. Even when I was in Copenhagen last year and did the University of Copenhagen, I mean, there were kids, freshmen who, you know, when we talked about the movie Milk, they mean that ancient movie. So, I mean, you know, you have to realize they were only 10, 9 or 8 when that movie came out. So, you know, it reminds me of the role that we all play in making sure that history is taught and that people know about the struggle. Because part of the struggle with the equality generation is that they don't realize of what how much sacrifice was made. And one of the great things, brilliant things about LGBT History Month is that it teaches the sacrifices. It teaches those people that had come before us and that laid the path that we all walk on.
So if there was one thing that you'd like to kind of leave as a key takeaway, what would that be, Stuart?
Well, you know, I think for your listeners who may be worried about the future, after the U.S. election, I posted a quote, which is a anonymous but fairly old quote that I would leave you with, which is that the devil whispered in my ear that you're not strong enough for this storm. And today I whispered in the devil's ear, I am the storm. We all have to be the storm. We all have to be the storm that stands up to movement backwards. And if we do that, then the hope that my uncle wanted the world to have, the hope that we all want to have for the future, will be sustained. We need to be able to be standing together with all minority communities and stay strong. And with that, we can keep the progress moving forward.
Stuart, I was greatly inspired by the film Milk. It has been an honour working with you for the past year and for LGBT History Month now as well, and an honour to talk with you on Joy 94.9 as well. The website is lgbthistorymonth.org.uk. There are a range of events across the country. There are hubs across England, London, Bournemouth, Exeter, Coventry, Shrewsbury, Liverpool, Manchester, Preston and York. And it is a significant year, as we've discussed. All leaves to say is just thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
It was Harvey who said it best. You gotta give him hope.
That was Stuart Milk, the founder of the Harvey Milk Foundation, talking about LGBT History Month with The Informer's UK correspondent, Dan Vo, in London. Dan is a media producer in London, and he also coordinates the award-winning LGBTIQ tours at the Victoria and Albert Museum. You can find him throughout social media as Dan Nouveau. Well, it just wouldn't be Christmas without Yvonne Gardner and Positive Attitudes Christmas Lunch. And Yvonne joins us on The Informer. Yvonne, welcome.
And thank you for the invitation to being on the show.
Yvonne, we say this each year, you're never going to do it again, but here we are again at Christmas, and once again, you're throwing on a big feast.
I am, Dave.
What can we expect for Christmas lunch this year?
Traditional Christmas Day lunch, of course. But this year, we've called it the Orphans' Christmas Lunch. I know I'm not particularly keen on that word, Dean, but there's a lot of people out there who, at this time of the year, have nowhere to go on Christmas Day lunch. So we're doing the usual thing. We're having open house for our community, their friends and allies or family, and we extend an invitation to them for a traditional Christmas Day lunch.
And who turns up to these things?
That's a very awkward question, Dean. It's like asking someone who runs a club, you know, what sort of people turn up. It's a variety of people, different age groups, Dean. Most of the people in our LGBTIQ or whatever, if I've missed out an alphabet number, I do apologise. It's open house, Dean. Just open house.
And it's a warm and welcoming environment for all.
It certainly is. It's a safe space. It's and also dogs are welcome. We sometimes have more dogs than people. Some people do have two or three dogs, so they bring their two or three dogs on leash.
But on leashes, right. There is a condition.
There is a condition. and it is adjacent to the Edinburgh Gardens. It's a lovely outlook, Dave.
It is indeed. The beside the grandstand, it's the community room at the old Fitzroy Football Oval Brunswick Street, St George's Road. Mm-hmm. There's a tram stop right there.
Number 20, Dean.
Number 20, right. On what?
By the way.
On what line?
It's the number 11 tram.
Right.
From Collins Street, and it's tram stop number 20. Even if you're coming from Northcote, it's still tram stop number 20.
Now, Yvonne, you put out a call each year for people to lend a hand as well. So do you need that again this year?
Anybody who'd like to put their hand up, making cauliflower cheese or gravy or slicing hams or whatever, Dean, anybody in the kitchen would be greatly appreciated.
And is that done on Christmas Eve, on the day before, or when
is that? The day before, we'll be down there decorating. I'll provide a little barbecue lunch for the volunteers. So if anybody would like to come down on the Saturday, help would be greatly appreciated. If not, they can attend on the Sunday, Dean.
So Positive Attitudes annual Christmas lunch. And if you'd like to lend a hand and help Yvonne out, you can do so on Christmas Eve. Yvonne, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, I'd probably suggest either contact me on my mobile number is 0410 75 75 20.
Or Yvonne, they can get you on 94710033, can't they?
Yep, that's it, Dean.
RSVPs by the 22nd of December.
Yep.
So at least you know how much to cater for.
Exactly. I'll be doing the shopping on the 22nd, so if we can even make it a little bit earlier on the 21st, make sure that we have enough food and enough champagne.
Well, Yvonne, we would all like to wish you a very Merry Christmas, and thank you very much for the wonderful work that you do in our community and providing a space for those who need it on Christmas Day. It's good, very good of you.
Thank you, Janet. I'd like to thank Joy Radio listeners also for all their support over the years. And I've had a great bunch of volunteers come from Joy.
Well, I'm pleased that they're pitching in. Yvonne, Merry Christmas to you and yours, and have a great day.
Thanks, Dean.
You can listen to these interviews again by heading to the Informer's webpage, joy.org.au/The Informer. My big thanks to Dan Vo in London for that interview with Stuart Milk. And my thanks to you for listening to The Informer throughout 2016. We'll be back with you in 2017 with all the news and current affairs that is important to our community. I'm Dean Beck. Thank you so much for joining me throughout the year. Don't forget you can follow The Informer at The Informer Joy, and you can follow me on Twitter at Dean Beck on Air. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you all. Bye for now.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.